This Writer's Row podcast is super interesting to me because I'm sitting down with one of my wife, Corey's closest friends, Jessie Lee. She just happens to have a number one hit with Kelsey Ballerini. She's closing in on a number one hit that's currently top five with Brett Young. And after taking advantage of our close friendship and canceling on me twice, Jessie Lee finally made it.
Third time's a charm.
It was either that or three strikes, you're out. No, so this is interesting because Jessie, so far, it's been people that I didn't know very well, at least. Like, it might be somebody that's come on Ty, Kelly, and Chuck, but it wasn't somebody that I, like, know. You, on the other hand, I'm your backup call if my wife doesn't answer her phone so that I can go upstairs and get Corey and be like, hey, Corey, Jessie's calling again.
Yeah, every time I call, I'm like, hey, where's your wife? Tell her that I've been trying to call her.
But I consider us, you know, friends.
No, we're totally friends.
I like
friends.
That you put me in my place.
No, I'm gonna start calling you just to say hey.
Okay, so this is the precedent. As people are listening, they should think of this as a sneak peek into a conversation if your significant other was sitting down with one of your good friends. Did that make sense?
No, we're friends too, Ty.
Okay, fair enough.
We're just not as close.
Well, I think we're going to learn. I really do. I realized as I was getting ready to have you in, I was like, oh, I'm actually really excited because I'm really proud of you. I'm really like, I love Peter Pan. I think it's one of the best songs that's ever been written. And every time I hear it, I just think it's smarter and smart. Here, we're going to play a little bit. You know this song. Always on the Are you complaining that there's somebody that might take pictures?
I am going to kill you. I rolled out of bed for this morning. I'm wearing my pajamas.
No, that's how it's supposed to be. This is like a bonding experience captured on HD cameras.
We're going to become best friends. Corey's going to get really jealous.
A couple other things that you may know Jessie Lee from include Brett Young and a song that is currently, is it top 10 now?
I think it is. He just texted me yesterday and said we're about to be in top 10. So I don't know if that was in real time. So it may be top 10 today.
Especially by the time that this is airing. This is Like I Loved You. Don't tell me we could still be friends. Hang out on the weekend. You're gonna be okay if I start seeing somebody new. You hope that I do. It won't be long till I forget to call every time that I'm drinking. And you ain't the love song. I can't keep from singing. I gotta be honest. If you really the truth, you never loved me like I loved you. It's awesome. And then one more, just so people can get a little bit of a background on who you are as a songwriter.
It's gonna be embarrassing.
Well, no, this was on Keith Urban. No, yeah, I could do one of yours.
Okay.
No, this is Keith Urban and a song. It was this on Ripcord? It is, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That Could Still Be Us.
That could still be us. Cause it still is sometimes at night when my eyes are shut.
Jessie Lee, character, total character. You never edit yourself, so don't do it on this either, okay?
I won't, don't worry. It's too early for editing.
Have you had time to think about a writer's rule that you would give? Like, if somebody were a newbie, they're a songwriter coming to town, they want to get started, is there kind of like a rule of thumb that you use?
I mean, the more songs you write, the better you get. I just read a book that was really interesting talking about that it takes 15,000 hours to master anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through to sports people and all throughout.
What was this book you read?
That
Outliers?
Is a really good question.
Is it
what was
Outliers
it?
By
yes,
Malcolm
it was
Gall-
Outliers.
And was
Thank
it 10,000 hours?
Oh, no, I'm already wrong. I'm already doing the facts wrong.
No, you're right. It's a mastery thing. It's
You know what? It took me 15,000 hours, Ty, okay?
For instance, Christian Bush said, when I write a wish. And Trey Bruce was in here recently, and he said he never books two writes in a day because he wants to be able to sit with a song without any pressure behind him.
I mean, it's different because I've been writing here in town for 15 years. So I've written so many songs that my whole thing when I walk into a room is I don't need to write another song. And I need to write a great song. I don't need to write a good song because mm-hmm. I already have a lot of good songs that nobody's ever going to hear. So, you know, my whole thing in the day is if it's not working, if nothing great comes out, let's not even finish it because there's no point in polishing a turd, so as we say.
Oh my God, there's no point in polishing a turd is your
That is my
writer's
rule.
Rule. There's no
Take notes.
When is the first time that you started writing songs?
I was 10. I wrote my first song with my mom. She was my first co-writer. And we wrote a song called The Motorhome Song. If you tell her to play me The Motorhome Song, she'll go in the Jessie Lee archives and she'll go in her little room and start pulling out old
tapes. It's recorded?
Oh, are you kidding me? I was in the studio by like 11 doing all my little work days.
Did your parents encourage you your musical career or was that you?
No. Well, they're both really musical. So I got, you know, they say I started cooing and cawing and singing before I could talk. My dad grew up playing in bands. My mom was a singer and she had a record deal when she was 16. And so I grew up, you know, in a musical family and I'm the only musical kid that they had. Mm-hmm. And they loved it. So my mom was very, very supportive. My dad was too. But by the time I hit 15, he was like, all right, we might actually have something here. And then he became the dadager.
And is that when you realized it too, when you knew music would be your life?
Oh, no, I thought it was going to be my life way before I was even close to being good. I was really terrible and I thought I was going to be a star.
So did you ever look back from that point or was there another revelation? Like, was there another moment where you went, oh, I actually really am doing this?
I mean, from 11 on, I started playing art and wine festivals all around Northern California. I did my own 30-minute sets with my Britney Spears headset mic.
Like Garth?
And my high socks. Yes, that's like awesome. Garth. And my high socks, which was very popular at the time. I basically did karaoke singing, opening up for big artists like throughout, like until I was 20.
Who were some of the artists?
Oh, gosh. I would sing on side stage for like Rascal Flatts and Keith Urban. I went out and I did one song because I won a contest. So I got on the main stage in front of 15,000 people and sang to a track with a microphone.
But were these songs you had written?
Oh, yeah. Most of them were.
You just meant karaoke style because you were on a microphone with a backing track.
Without a band. So it's so funny because, you know, I've been in Nashville so long and everyone's like, oh, so when you were an artist, did you play with a band a lot? And I'm like, actually, I think I've performed with a live band maybe 5 times in my life. And I had a record deal for 4.5 years. And I've only done it that many times.
Wow. And is there anything about the simplicity of just like your voice and a guitar? Like to me, I think that's stronger. I love to hear a vocal and a guitar.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. But at the time, I wasn't good enough to accompany myself. So that's had to be, you know, that's something that I'm learning.
And even back at the beginning, what you're talking about, you describe it like kind of a pop performance, but was it country music?
Yeah, it was country. I was doing like covers of the Judds and
You were talking about like your Britney Spears microphone and like your...
Well, that was because, you know, I was trying to be like Shania Twain / Garth Brooks, but that was literally what Britney Spears wore.
Picture
because
that,
she was,
baby, by the way.
Yeah, because she was dancing so much. So I don't know if I was dancing. I don't know what I was doing up there with that headset mic.
I'll ask your mom to pull the videos out at the same time as she pulls out the motorhome song.
I had a bowl cut. It was very red.
So when did It's a Girl Thing come out?
That came out in, I believe, 2008.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, 2008, 2009.
So this is songwriter and artist, Jesse, from nine-ish years ago. So every time we mention this song, for some reason you say like, that's embarrassing. You're like, oh my gosh, do you have to play that? Are you actually, why is it so vulnerable for you to hear that song?
I don't know, because I think I sound terrible and I don't know. It's very old. Anything that's older than maybe 3 years, I'm embarrassed by.
Why? Because you feel like you've grown as an artist or a writer?
Yeah. I don't know. Better?
Are these the turds you were talking about? There's no point in polishing a turd?
Oh no.
Is it that bad to you?
No, I mean, it's not that. I mean... Actually, girls had really liked that song. I mean, it only got to 47 on the charts, but I remember them being like, this has sold 100,000 copies. So if we're only getting, you know, to 47, it's done pretty well.
And were you the only writer on that song or did you work with people?
No, I wrote it with Victoria Banks and Rachel Proctor.
As you've gone through your writing career, have you found people that naturally write different kinds of music with? Or do you have people that you especially want to write because you never know what you're going to get?
I mean, every day you never know what you're going to get. Even people that I love writing with, we can write something terrible that day or we can write something magical. So, but, you know, it changes kind of in seasons. There's some people, especially since I've been writing here for so long, there are some people that I haven't written with in 5 years. And then I see them on my calendar. I'm like, oh, I haven't written a song with them in so long. And then, you know, we get back and we're like, oh, that's why we haven't written in so long. That was terrible. Or it's amazing. And you're like, wow, we've missed out in the last 5 years together. But I'm like, I constantly write with new people because there's so many great, talented people that are moving to Nashville and that I've never heard of that somehow my publishers hear them and say, hey, I think you guys would work really well together. So there's those people. And then there's the people that have been in Nashville writing for as long as I have that I continually kind of write with. And
what's the process when you get into a room for the first, you know, like, because you go almost every single day to write. When you first get there, what happens?
Well, usually start talking. And if I know them, then we'll just start gossiping about whatever the day. And like the other day, someone, never mind.
Can you do it anonymously?
I just stopped myself. I just filtered myself.
That was the, I know, you, I literally just filtered myself.
Well, because, I don't know if that's good. I had a co-writer the other day who we became like really good friends, I think, just after this one write, because she confessed. I said, wow, you look really good. You've lost weight since the last time I wrote with you 4 months ago. And she's like, that's what happens when you have a gayonce. He came out like she was engaged to a guy and then now he likes
guys.
Oh, so
she like revenge hotted herself.
Exactly.
She got revenge hot.
Exactly. Not that she can like morph herself into a guy. That's the only thing you could really do to get him to want you. But
yeah, but she was using it as motivation.
Exactly.
And then did that turn into a song?
It's really hard to write about that. I don't really know who's going to cut that, A.
Was it inspired? Like, did you go down the romantic path when you wrote the song that day?
We didn't do that, but that's like how, I mean, that's how comfortable you get with people. So then that whole conversation, I'm like, wait. We can't jump into writing a song from that. So now I have to hear your whole life story. Uh-huh. And how, because the first time we wrote, we didn't really get into it as much. So this time, she and another girlfriend of mine, we chatted for 2.5 hours before we wrote. And then, so once, and that happens a lot with girls, obviously, because it's a lot more chatty in the co-writes. But then once you get to writing the song, you know, I usually have an idea of what I want to write that day. I have a list of a million ideas in my phone. Mm-hmm. And I usually scroll through my phone and go, nope. I've seen that for the last 6 months. Still don't want to write that.
Are they titles or are they like just sort of like a plot line?
Yeah. So we call the title the hook. You know, if I had like, well, I guess Peter Pan, like usually the title is the hook. But in songwriter speak, we say, well, I have a hook and it's called, you know, for Peter Pan, I said the hook is, you're never going to grow up. You're never going to be a man, Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. So I had that written down.
Well, let's talk about that story, because you play around town. You do a lot of writer's rounds. And obviously, Peter Pan is a number one hit. It's something that people have known for a few years now really well. So you walk into a room with not yet discovered Kelsea Ballerini. And who else?
And Forrest Whitehead.
And you guys decide, we're going to write this song, Peter Pan. Obviously, it was already written down on your notes. Like, you brought the idea in, right?
Yeah. So that was a really funny day, because I had written a song about a month prior with Forrest Whitehead and a guy, Lance Carpenter, and I really loved the song that we wrote. And so I knew I liked writing with Forrest just from the initial time. So I saw him on my calendar again, and then I saw this girl's name, Kelsea Ballerini. Never heard of her. No one in town knew her. She had, you know, recently signed a publishing deal, I think maybe a year before, didn't have a record deal, and really wasn't writing with any big writers in town. I walked in and we started chatting, and I'm like, well, tell me about yourself. And she's like, yeah, I'm an artist. And, you know, so I'd love to write for me. And we're just kind of shooting the shit, as they say. And I tell them, I'm like, well, I have a really great idea, but if we don't kill it, I'm going to go rewrite it with other people.
Like, do people say that in a
writing
room?
Nobody says that. And I've never said that. That's why it's so funny, because I've said it since, because now everybody knows in town that whole story. And so now it's just kind of funny. But yeah, I had never said that before.
So you were planning that if this didn't work out, we're out again. I'm going to take this idea. I'm going to do something else with
because
it.
I've been holding on to it for 6 months. So in Nashville, if you write an idea, it's kind of frowned upon if you, not kind of, it is. It's frowned upon if you then rewrite it with other people or you try to take back your idea. Mm-hmm. But at this point, you know how many songs there are in the world? Like, we're pretty much out of ideas. Like, there is no new, fresh idea that nobody's ever thought of. So when you come across an idea that you love, that you're like, wow, I've never heard that before. And I think other people in town since have heard that. And they said, oh, so-and-so wrote a song about that. Or, yeah, I'd heard that, but it was never a hit, or, you know, not very many people heard it. But for me, I had never heard it. So I wanted to make it really special because I really loved it and I'd been hanging on to it for 6 months. So when I said that, their jaws kind of dropped and they just started laughing. And she was like, all right, challenge accepted. Let's do this. Kelsea has said in interviews that it raised the bar and it was like, okay, let's kill this idea and make it really great. And it really fell out of us. I mean, there are some really hard writing days and there are some just where you don't know where that gift, I mean, whether it was from God or like how it fell in your lap, but that song just kind of poured out of us seamlessly. And there was never that point where we're like, oh, we can't find this line, or like, how do we do this melody? So we wrote it in about, I mean, under 2 hours. And my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, he was in town from Detroit, and he was in the office. It was like, take your husband to work day. And he was in the office working next to us. So when we finished the song, I was like, we got to play this for Jason and see what he thinks. And we were all looking at each other like, this sounds like a hit, doesn't it? Like, none of us know what a hit is because we've never written one, but it sure sounds like one. So we called him in and we played it for him, and he just looked at us and he goes, that's a smash. And of course, like, he's not in the music business. Like, he's just a country fan, so he has no idea either. So we had 4 people that day that had no idea how to write a hit, but thought that that was it. And then it took 3.5 years, but now my husband, every time, he's like, well, you know, I am the meter for what a hit song is, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
What would you say is your calling card on that song? Like, and I don't know how this works. If this isn't something that writers say out loud either, then just stop me and be like, you're an idiot. Because I never talked to Corey about songwriting. That's her world, and I try to stay out of it.
Really?
Like, I don't ever want to like affect what she does. I think that she's super talented. I love her. I'm so proud of her. But like, I never ask her. So I instead go to you and other people in the industry, and I'm like, what is my wife doing all the time?
Oh my gosh.
But is there like a piece about the song Peter Pan that is kind of like your style that you'd say, that's kind of my style? Like, that's what you'll hear from different songs I write.
I don't know about my style. I've kind of realized in the last couple years that phrasing is so important and rhymes are so important. And sometimes just how you sing. I watched an interview with, I'm blanking on her name. Who is the girl who wrote Chandelier, the songwriter?
Yeah. Now, what's her name? Sia, right?
Sia. Yes. I listened to an interview that she did saying that she can make anything rhyme, any word. And then she kind of like sang some melodies and gave an example out of it. And I'm like, oh my God, she really can. Mm-hmm. Just like with pitch and tone and how you like morph a word with a melody. And so I've been kind of taking that and doing more of that myself. And just realizing that like what pop songwriters do is they're like, ear candy is the most important thing. So what do people want to hear where this phrase, this rhyme needs to land on this, and this sonically would sound better than this word? And so it's just such a puzzle with, it's not always, it's the best thing to say mixed with what sounds the best and like what word sounds awesome. So I'm kind of doing more of that and just really focusing on, country has always been about the story and that the lyrics matter. And unfortunately, we've kind of gotten away from that, but I still try to do that in songwriting because I think that's what separates us from other genres.
Yeah.
And I'm going off on a tangent, but that's what, you know, so in the room, I'm like, okay, what sounds the best too? Like, what can we say, but it needs to sound great? Because this is something I always say, and I guess this would be my rule. This is another rule thing I have. I've started telling people, I said, you can have a hit song with a hit melody and terrible lyrics, but there's no such thing as a hit song with a terrible melody and fantastic lyrics. So
the melody really is really important.
The melody is the most important. And, you know, most people that write with me know that I bring lyrics and melody, but definitely I care more about melody because just what I said, it doesn't matter how good your lyrics are.
Yeah.
If the melody's not great,
it's got to be something that's an earworm too. Yeah, it's got to catch your ear.
Yeah. If the melody's not great, then it's just a poem. And there's lots of people who can write beautiful poems.
Can production screw up a great song? Can production blow a hit song?
Oh, that is my pet peeve. I've had so many badly produced songs lately that I'm like, this ruined the song. And it's frustrating because I'm not a producer. I'm actually terrible at the production side of it. So I know what sounds good, but I don't know how to make it sound better. And yes, so I've written songs and I'm like, man, this is really great. And then I get back the demo and I'm like, oh, this is a turd. Gosh.
Can't polish this.
I mean, you could, but I don't know how. But yes, so production, I don't think that you can take a non-hit song and produce it and be like, oh my God, it's a hit. But you can definitely take a hit song and mess it up and not make it sound like a hit.
Has it happened to you? Is there one that you really wish would have taken off and you're like, ah, I just want another try, or I want to see how we could do that a different way and just see if it would sound different?
Dude, it's happened to me like 5 times in the last 2 weeks. I called my publisher. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I was
quitting?
Like, I'm heavy. I have so many bad demos. I was like, they are ruining my songs. It's frustrating for me because, and it costs a lot of money. So, you know, when you pay to do demos, I mean,
do you pay? So you have a publisher. I don't necessarily know how this works either. You have a pub deal. So mm-hmm. you're automatically like basically a salaried writer.
Right.
And then you get to record a certain amount of songs, or like, how does that work when it comes down to like which ones you demo?
I probably demo the least out of most songwriters. I should probably demo more because you never really know. You could get back a demo and someone could cut it and you would have been like, I never would have demoed that. Mm-hmm. If I feel really strongly about a song and I'm like, this isn't good, it's great, then I'll demo it.
And then who pays for it? How does that work with the pub deal?
So the publisher pays for it and it's all written in the contract, but you have to then recoup. So any money that you get from your publisher is really just a bank loan. Uh-huh. So you, like your salary, you end up having to pay that back on royalties later in the future.
But that's only if the song makes money. And is that by song or is that by all of your catalog?
It's by your whole catalog.
Okay.
So, you know, I try to not, I mean, now, fortunately, I'm in a position where I don't have to take a lot of money on the front end and or any money. And so, you know, because you have to pay it back anyway, and then you can negotiate better if you don't need the money and you can, you know, do different things in your contract that. But they do. They pay up front for these demo costs and then later you split it with them, or maybe you pay 75% and they pay the rest. Yeah. So each demo cost, I mean, by the time you put on, you're in the studio and you do vocals and you have all the live musicians that are all incredible here in Nashville. You're looking at like $800 a song. So if you're spending $800 a song and you're writing a song a day, like, I mean, you can't demo every song, you know, and now the thing
so you
in
just
Nashville,
ask Jason, is it worth it? Is
yeah,
this a
exactly.
Hit?
I'm like, is this a hit? Should I be spending the money? You know, in Nashville now we have a lot of track guys and they all hate that. They're really, they like the term producers. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of producers that we write with and then they demo it and that's what they bring to the table so that we don't have to pay for a demo. You know, for me, sometimes that works out great. And lately it hasn't been working out great because I don't necessarily have the same vision for production. So even though I told you that's not my strong suit, I still hear a lot of things differently. And if I go in the studio and I cut it with musicians, I can direct them. Whereas if it's another co-writer, it's only them, it's their ideas. You know, they might say, hey, what do you think about this? But at that point, it's usually too far down the road. Yeah. And the song's done. And then you're just kind of tweaking, saying, hey, I need the vocal up a little bit or turn this down. And then that's about all you get to do.
Is there a secret to that when it comes to, you know, you write a song and you write with a group of people. If a new writer comes into town and they really do want to demo some of their stuff, what's like the best way to go find the right sound for what is in your head? Do you find your own studio musicians? Do you try a track first? Do you just do a work tape?
Well, I would say that, you know, the best thing to do, and again, it all costs money. So that's kind of the hard thing. But nowadays, it used to be 20 years ago, A&R people at record labels, management companies, the artists, that they could listen to a work tape just on your phone recorded. Mm-hmm. I guess it wasn't on your phone.
20 years ago on your phone.
I was trying to say, I guess 20 years ago it wasn't. Well, yeah, I guess when I was writing, I had a little tape deck and I had a button that I pushed down for record. So back in the day when it was the tape, you know, people could hear just acoustic work tapes and hear through them and pick out. I mean, there's been a million hits that have come just from scratch work tapes. But now, I mean, you can't even play those in any meetings. Like everybody wants to hear. It has to sound like it's already on the radio.
What's the most personal song you've ever written? Ever. Doesn't have to be something we know.
My song Killing Me, probably.
What's it about? Do you have can you play it? Do you know it?
Oh gosh. I haven't played it in so long. Let me see. Well, I don't have my guitar out.
While Jesse's getting her guitar out and wondering if she can remember this song, I should also point out every writer's round I've ever gone to, even if it was a week ago at the listening room or something, you don't even remember the words to Peter Pan. I'm not sure that you... I don't think there's a high standard for you to live up to here. I think you'll be okay.
I remembered them the other day for maybe the first time ever.
Were they on an iPad or anything?
No.
Oh, awesome.
Actually, I played a show the other night and I didn't mess up one lyric. I even played your favorite, That Could Still Be Us, without messing it up. And
really?
I haven't played it in months.
I do love that song. I love that Keith Urban song. I want to ask you about that in a second. Where you, like how you found out that was going to Keith.
That's a crazy story. I think I can remember it.
What is the story behind this song?
I was super heartbroken for like years.
Over who?
I'm not telling you.
When? How old were you?
They could hear this.
Well, how old were you ish?
I was 22 and then 3 years. So it took me and my husband to get over it. So I cried every day for a year.
Why'd you guys break up? Can I ask that?
Yeah. Basically, I mean, like, we are, I mean, terrible for each other. It was just, it was two artists together. That's never a good idea.
Volatile.
Yeah, very volatile. And, you know, so we were like two stubborn people that always need to be right and have attention on them. And then...
was it just not right, or was there like...
Well, no, so I broke up with him thinking, I'm so awesome, he's going to come back to me and change.
How'd that go?
Yeah, that didn't really go. So, but thank God it didn't go because...
You found Jason.
Yeah, I found Jason, and he's perfect for me. So I think I dodged a bullet, honestly. So
good.
It's a good thing. But I wrote this song about it. I always laugh and say, if Taylor Swift hadn't written Teardrops on my guitar, I would have written that because I was doing that while I was writing this song. And I was literally crying as I was writing it. And it was probably already like a year later. I was trying to learn how to finger pick. I'd never finger picked a guitar in my life. And I was sitting up in bed. It was like 1 a.m. And I just started going like this. And learning how to do that. And then I wrote this song. And then I continued to rewrite it for about 3 months. And I wrote about 4 pages of lyrics.
Because it was that important of a song, or you just thought you were onto something?
I just loved it so much, and I wanted to make sure it was right. And I, you know, I can take that amount of time when I'm writing by myself, which when you get in a room with someone, you're like, okay, hey, we got to write today. We have 4 hours. And then what do your schedules look like to finish it? Oh, cool. We can get back in 3 months with all of our schedules. Awesome. So you feel like you're on a time crunch. And so, yeah, so this was just my own editing. And I hadn't written, this was literally the second song ever I've ever written by myself, because my ADD is so bad and I'm writing so much. So when I sit down to write by myself, I literally can't finish anything.
Right.
So I have about 100 songs that I've started. And sometimes I bring those in to other people to co-writes the next day. And I'll say, hey, I started this, you know, finish it. And I remember Danny Myrick, who you know.
Yeah.
I remember I called him and his girlfriend, well, now his wife, Megan. I started playing it to him on the phone. And I go, what do you guys think about this? And Megan's like, oh, we're at a bar. Hold on a second. And I'm like, okay, I'm really excited.
We can't wallow in your misery right now.
Yeah, I was like, I'm really excited about this. Wait, can you get out? Can you step out and listen and tell me what you think? And I played it, and she was like, I love that. That sounds amazing. So I did that to them for about 3 months. And I'm like, what do you guys think about this lyric? And then... it'd be like, oh, it's a little too dark, a little too, I want to slit my wrist. And I'm like, okay, I'll back to the drawing board. And then even at one point, I was writing with Danny and another hit writer. And Danny goes, dude, play him that song that you started. And I played it, and he's like, it was half done. And he goes, oh, you want to finish that today? I'm like, nope. This is mine. And he's like, dang it.
Let's see if you still know it.
Okay, let me, this could be really interesting. You come me and I come running. I can't help it, there's just something about you. I can't live without you. Just like a black hole in the sky, you draw me in with those blue eyes. Again and again, I'm a moth, you're the flame. I can't resist, you're the needle, I'm the vein. I might as well smoke cigarettes, wake up with whiskey on my breath, walk in front of a moving train. Take one too many sleeping pills, forget to feel how feeling feels. Anything to help numb the pain and my misery. 'Cause loving you is killing me. I am so hoarse right now.
Really? That's how you feel? I feel like your voice is awesome.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I always think that.
I'm like, I feel like it's like 5 a.m. and it's 11:30, but it is CMA week.
That's true.
I was out every night.
Well, and I told you, like, Keith Urban, That Could Still Be Us, it's such a cool song. And Keith, obviously, I don't know how much you know about how much I love Keith Urban, but it is ridiculous. I have so much respect for that guy.
The love is deep.
I think he deserves every award that he gets, and he deserves Entertainer of the Years that he never gets. He's awesome.
He is killer.
Well, when did you find out that he was cutting a song?
I wrote the song with a good friend of mine, Jason Duke, who I write with a lot, and another guy, Johnny Price. It was the first time writing with Johnny, and Jason and I, we write together a lot, so we had our guitars out, and Johnny was sitting there, and we had no idea what we were going to write. And then, you know, we threw out a bunch of titles, and I finally threw out, I have a title, you know, called That Could Still Be Us. And they're both like, ooh, I love that. So Jason and I just kind of started on this, and then That Could Still Be Us. And I just started singing that melody, da-da-da-da-da, and like without words, and da-da-da-da-shut. And they're like, oh, and then all of a sudden Johnny gets up and he goes on the keyboard and he starts doing all this production stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, A, I didn't see that back there. B, I was like, I didn't know he was the track guy in the room. And, you know, he got excited and started playing all these like cool, quirky pop kind of tracks. And then that chorus fell out. And then later, you know, we started on the verse and then I had to go. Johnny lives in New York, so he's like, I'm leaving on a flight out tomorrow morning, and I couldn't get back. So Jason was like, well, I'll get back with you on this, and we'll work on the verses.
Are you good at that, at the waiting game? Like, once you've started something you're really excited about, can you be like, all right, we'll get back on this? Or do you have to, like, keep
actually,
plugging?
I can, and I kind of like it, because then you get back, and you're like, oh, this is still really awesome. Or you're like, yeah, I was obviously really tired that day for thinking this was cool, because it's not. So it's nice.
But this one was awesome.
Yes. Well, I loved the chorus, and I kind of didn't think about it again. They got back on the verses. They sent it to me, and I was like, meh, it's all right. 3 months later, Johnny goes, hey, I hope you guys don't mind, but I worked on our song, and I rewrote the verses.
Ooh.
And we wrote an awesome chorus that day, and I redid the verses. So he sends it to us, and we're like, what is this, like, crazy demo? It was like very pop, like very all over the place. And it was obviously the verses were totally different than what we had written. So we're like, that's interesting. And but we thought that it was too busy, the whole production. And we couldn't really like hear the song through it. My publishing guys think it'd be really awesome if we got a piano vocal for this. And they think it'd be perfect for Nick Jonas. And we're like, wait,
wow.
What?
Had you in your head already, like in your mind, picked some artists that you thought would be good for?
No. Okay. I mean, in my mind,
Nick Jonas.
I mean, I heard this song and I was like, this is just going to be another one of my songs that no one ever hears, which I've actually written that song. I wrote a song called This Is a Song No One's Ever Going to Hear. And it's like the song wrote it. Mm-hmm. It's coming from the song's perspective. So, but anyway, sidebar, I have a lot of those. So I thought this was going to be one of them that was going to like die in the song graveyard. And then 3 days go by and he sends us a new demo with a piano vocal of it. And I was like, wow, that just like took on a whole nother thing. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Still don't hear Nick Jonas, but what do I know?
Right.
2 days later, he sends us an email and was like, it was from Keith Urban. And it was his email address was blocked out, or like, you know, they like whited
redacted.
Out over it.
Yeah.
And it said in big caps, hold, with like 10 exclamation marks.
Based on that stripped down piano vocal.
See, and that's where that goes back to when you said, can production, like what does production do? I mean, production, that's everything. So
yeah.
Had Keith heard this other demo, I doubt that would have happened, you know, but the stripped down version is how they cut it. And he used Johnny to produce it because he loved his demo so much. So after that email and he said, hold, and I'm like, we just got a Keith Urban hold from Keith Urban, which like, that's the coolest thing ever, because when you know the artist puts it on hold, it's not their people that are like, hey, we like this for them.
We'll see what they think.
Yeah, we'll see what they think, or we probably won't ever get them to hear it, you know? So I was like, holy cow, well, when's he cutting? You know, sometimes with those superstars, it's like very behind the black curtain. You're like, we have no idea what this project's going to sound like, when they're going in the studio. And then next thing you know, like literally a week and a half later, it was like, Keith Urban cut your song.
Awesome.
And then his record came out like 2 weeks later.
So did you know it was going to be for sure on Ripcord, or
no,
do you wait
you
and find
know.
Out?
You don't know it's for sure on until you literally see it on iTunes.
Wow.
Like, to say how crazy his project was, they put his record out on iTunes. I have another good buddy, Ash Bowers, who I write with, who's an amazing songwriter. He was an artist himself. And Keith Urban cut one of his songs, and he told me, he was like, oh my gosh, it may be the single, it's on the record too, I can't believe like we both got cuts. I'm like, that's amazing. The Ripcord album came out on pre-order, his song was not on it.
Bummer.
And he called the record label, and he was like, basically like probably almost in tears, being like, you guys told me it was on the record, I just saw it on iTunes, it's not on the record. Mm-hmm. And he said, I had all these other artists who wanted this song, and they literally refunded everybody their money who pre-ordered this record over the next few days, took it down off of iTunes, and put this song on it, and redid the entire record.
Wow.
And moved mine down, and everybody's.
So Ash's song is on it now.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So after the record already came out, people already pre-ordered it.
Yeah.
And bought it. And then days later, it came back and it was on it. So, I mean, that's.
Well, that says Keith loved the song too, obviously, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that was a really great song. And so, you know, that's why I say, like, you can't celebrate until you see it on. And apparently you can't even celebrate then, because anything could happen. I mean, they could have kicked something off, or, you know, he could have said, usually in people's contracts, it says how many songs you can have on a record, because that has to do with like points, how much people are making, producer fees, everything. So, you know, a lot of contracts will say this will be a 10 album record, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Obviously, Keith Urban, he can dictate how many songs he wants probably, or pay for it out of his own pocket.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to split the money from one record, which is just one record sales, a trillion different ways.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, gosh, it's all so complicated. I don't even really understand. The only thing I know is that, yeah, it like the songs, the amount of songs matters. And sometimes if you're a big enough artist, you have to kick in your own money if you want to add songs to this record. So that's how crazy it is that like you never really know. And I didn't want to celebrate it too soon. I'm like, well, he cut like, I mean, the rumor was that he cut 36 songs for this record. And then how many, I mean, I think,
and then like 11 make it, or
12. 13 were on it. Jeez. And so really, really crazy. I mean, he's an idol of mine. And like I told you, remember I did like the karaoke song and opened for him.
Yeah.
Like little me in high school. And so if I could go back and tell myself, like, you're going to have a song on his record. I mean,
that's insane.
I never in my wildest dreams thought that would ever happen. So was pretty cool.
Let's talk one more song from another artist. And then I want to find out your thoughts on, because you're one of the youngest songwriters that's been on this podcast. So I want to hear your thoughts on like,
oh my
whether
gosh,
or not songwriters.
I'm young still. Thank you.
Not really. That was just my wife told me. So
I was feeling really good.
No. But I think that you'll have a different perspective compared to some of the artists that, or the songwriters that have been here for, you know, maybe another decade or two before you. The landscape has changed. But first, Brett Young. So we were talking about how Like I Loved You is top 10 right now. And who knows where it's headed. It could be headed straight to the top. When did you write with Brett?
Brett and I wrote, it's probably been about 3 years now. We wrote the song 3 years ago. And I was one of the first people he ever wrote with in Nashville. I think like his first.
Because he came from California, right?
He came from California and he didn't have a publishing deal. He didn't have a record deal. Nobody knew him. Again, same kind of Kelsey story. I feel like I've gotten really lucky on the front end with these superstars. And he was working with these two women, Liz and Rana, and they have a song plugging business where, you know, you sign on with them and then they plug your songs to different people, help set up co-writes. So they had called my publishing company and said, hey, we want to get Jesse with this guy. And they, my publishing company played me his voice and I had no idea what he even looked like. And I just heard his voice and I'm like,
what,
yes,
does looks matter?
I am in.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I am in on the voice alone. And then, of course, we get set up to write. He walks in and I'm like, this guy's a star. Like, if he looks like this and sounds
that. Fairly handsome,
he's like,
I guess.
6'6". I don't even know. Yeah, 6'5". Super tall. Too tall for me. I'm way too short. But
and
he,
way too married, Jesse.
Well, I mean, that's like, that goes without saying.
Right.
I mean.
So he comes in and he's a songwriter at that point. He understands what he's supposed to be doing in the music business.
Yes, but he's pretty, I mean, he's new to Nashville. He's new to co-writing. So he had been writing by himself a lot. New to the whole Nashville world. I think that was like one of his first weeks that he came to Nashville to write with other people. And we get in and we're trying to write stuff. We're talking, we're getting to know each other. Nothing's happening. And then as, you know, he tells the story too, I've heard him in interviews and he's like, man, I thought the day was shot. And then like I always do, I said, I'm hungry, let's go to lunch. Because I'm always the one who says, let's go eat in every write. And he's like, all right. So we go to lunch, chat more, thinking that our day's over, we're never going to write a song. We come back and, you know, he's playing guitar and I just start kind of going on some stuff. And then next thing you know, We write Like I Loved You in like an hour.
Wow.
And so
1 hour 3 years ago.
3 years
and
ago.
And this song, for all we know, it could be number one by now.
When I mean, where's some wood? We got a knock on it. Yeah. Here's some wood.
There's
I mean,
everywhere.
Hopefully, I think. I mean,
wood.
The radio loves him.
Yes.
The radio loves him. The screen loves him. Yeah. I mean, he's just, it's crazy to watch his star climb and just, I mean, he's just such a nice, genuine person. And I remember him telling me, you know, he's very sure in what he wants to write and what he doesn't want to write in the room. And we've written, we wrote a lot after that song. And he'd always say, I want mothers to be able to bring their 13-year-old daughters to my concerts.
That's cool.
I don't want to write anything inappropriate. I don't want to, you know, it can be, I don't want to write something too sexy or, you know, so it's like, and he is such an emotional guy. I mean, if you follow him on Instagram, it's hilarious. I'm like, he is the biggest, I mean, he's just a teddy bear. And so all of his memes and his like love stuff, I'm like, that's really him. He's just such a ball of mush. So it's really cool that a guy in our format can be that sensitive and vulnerable and have all these like love songs, because I really think, I mean, I don't think anyone thought that was going to work because his record is so ballad heavy. And so he really found this niche where people just want to hear the honesty. And I mean, his voice is just so good at delivering that kind of music. So, so he's really just a breath of fresh air, I feel like, for our format.
Well, he came kind of late. I mean, not late, but he definitely was no like spring chicken, they say. He wasn't super young when he came to Nashville.
No.
He was in his mid-30s and just really tackled it hard. But that's as an artist and a songwriter. So as a young songwriter yourself, and all these different like digital initiatives are being pushed to Congress and people are hoping that royalties will change soon.
Mm-hmm.
But is it worth somebody who's interested in writing and coming here and pursuing that dream just as a songwriter? Is it worth it? Would you still tell them to do it?
I mean, I would never want to crush somebody's dreams and say, don't do it. There's no money. You're going to starve to death.
Well, what are the chances?
But, I mean, I got my real estate license when it wasn't working out. When I wasn't making enough money, I'm like, I'm going to do something to be able to afford what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that anytime you have a dream, it's worth it to go pursue it. However, you have to pursue it. So, you know, for me, a lot of people have side jobs. So yeah, I definitely think, I mean, if you love music and it's in your veins and you feel like that's something that you have to do in life and you're not going to be happy without doing it, that's when you should move here. And that's when you should pursue songwriting as a career. But, you know, unless the royalties change and all that, then there isn't going to be a career as an American songwriter. You know, it's just going to be, which is incredibly sad. And hopefully, you know, in the next few coming years, they'll figure that out. Music is being used now more than ever in the world. I mean, there's more money out there for the music business than there ever has been. It's just not trickling down to the songwriter. But I mean, I think they're going to figure that out because people are going to miss great music. And
I agree with you 100%.
So, I mean, I think when all of a sudden you listen to the radio and it's just the same songs coming out or just like terrible music, then people are going to be like, okay, we actually have to pay for something that we enjoy.
Okay, one Ask Kiss and two more questions and then this is over.
Yes.
Okay? Number one, I want you to know this because I don't think I tell you and I don't think there's a way to do it in normal life. I think that you're probably my favorite songwriter in this city. I think that the way that you craft a song, and I hear it in different songs you've done. So it's like, it's not just, oh, that group of writers did that. It's like Jesse Lee consistent.
Aww,
I think
you.
That the way that songs work when you're involved in them is awesome. And I don't say that very often about songwriters, so I want you to know that. First thing that a songwriter should do, this is the question part. What is the first thing if a songwriter comes to Nashville knowing that that huge money-making dream isn't sitting right there right now, but they really want to pursue it? How do they make that first step into songwriting?
I think it all starts with networking. At songwriter rounds, like go, I mean, I'm about to grab coffee with a girl who sent me a message on Instagram just saying, I'm a huge fan of yours and your writing and I would love to just pick your brain about stuff. So, yeah.
So reach out to people when you see them?
Yeah, reach out to people and be fearless in showing them what you can do, you know, and saying, hey, like, I'd love to play you something or here's a song. Would you listen? I mean, I knocked down doors when I came to town. And I think the people that actually end up being successful here are the ones that hear no a million times and still wake up every morning and do what they love to do. And be like, okay, one of these days I'm going to hear a yes. Because I don't even think he knows this, but I had a meeting with Scott Hendricks as like a 15 or 16-year-old me. Mm-hmm. And he told me not to move here. And he said, go to college. It's really tough, really hard for girls. And, you know, I wouldn't. Basically, yeah, I mean, just kind of shattered my dreams. I walked out of there, like, pretty much almost in tears. And 4 years later, I got signed to Warner Brothers, who awesome. He's now A&R at that label.
And that's because no, no, no meant yes, yes, yes to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, anything you want. My dad would always... I called my parents crying so many times, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I've been beaten down. And my dad said, everything is hard. Everything that is worth it is hard in this life. He goes, if you think real estate's going to be, he would always tell me that, because I said, I should just go into real estate. And he goes, if you think real estate's going to be any easier, you're in for a rude awakening. Yeah. He said, there's a million realtors. And it's true. And like anything that you have the potential to be really successful, make a lot of money. I mean, all those things are hard. It takes a lot of work. And this business is especially difficult, and it's not for the faint of hearts. So now more than ever, I love doing this. But it's really nice how many times I got told no, and how many falls and unsuccessful attempts at getting songs cut I've had, because it makes these songs that much more special. Mm-hmm. So I think that networking is important. Meeting people, writing as many songs as possible, because the more you do something, the better you get at it. And listening to music and figuring out there's a mathematical way that people are doing this. Like, here's where the melody has to lift. Here's where, if you have a really crazy rapid chorus, then let's let the verse breathe. So listen to your favorite songs and kind of dissect them and say, what about these songs is making them special, and figuring out what people do and finding your own thing.
So speaking of special songs, you go out to these writers' rounds, and we've already mentioned some songs of yours and songs that you've written that other people have cut. What's the most requested song when you say to the audience, what do you guys want to hear?
Hotel.
I love Hotel. Have you guys heard Hotel? Here we go.
I didn't think it showed. Truth is, I didn't know if I could stand face to face with a woman that took my man to a
language, Jessie Lee. So fun to see. And I love, like, going out to see you at rounds and stuff, because there's something special about not just the lyrics, but the voice too. And I hope people go, and that you're one of the people that they just come after and they're like, I heard your Writer's Rule podcast and you said harass people until they let you in and then go to coffee.
All of a sudden I'm have like 10 coffee meetings a day.
Yep.
I'm like, sorry, I can't write. I'm busy at my next coffee meeting.
I'll hook you up. I'll give you some Dunkin' cards or something.
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming in and
hi,
hanging out.
I love you. Thank you for having me. Thanks for listening, everyone.